Okay. This is the last agenda for today. And we have the guest speaker from ICAEW, Ms. Kirsten Garion and Richard Arning. And the ISB staff, Andy, would do a brief introduction comment, then followed by Kirsten's presentation. And this should be a very thought-provoking agenda. And after this, session, that we would have breakout sessions. Okay, so could you do that first?
All right, thank you. So I'm just going to give you a brief introduction to the session to explain why it is we've asked Kirsten and Richard to come in and speak to us today. The next session is aiming to continue our look at the future of corporate reporting and IFRS standards, but particularly on the potential impact of technology. This is going to be a continuing discussion resulting partly from the structure and effectiveness review and partly from comments that we've heard during previous discussions with the Advisory Council. The last time this council discussed the topic of technology was in November, the November meeting, as part of the wider discussion on that review of structure and effectiveness. At that point, only one of the breakout groups for the review looked at the specific issue of technology, but the aim today is for all four breakout groups to answer two questions in this area. So the questions that you'll be thinking about after this talk will be, which new technologies do you see having the most impact on your life and the way you work at the moment? With a second question of what technological impact can you see on how financial statements are prepared, audited, and used? Can you see any of the technology discussed in the first question changing how accounting standards are used? So do bear those two in mind while you're listening to the next presentation. The cover paper for this session does say that I'm going to do a sort of a brief overview on technology and investment analysis. I don't really want to preempt too much of what our guest speakers are going to say, however, so all I'm really going to do is throw a very quick comment on how technology pervades across financial reporting and corporate reporting. Obviously, it impacts heavily on our everyday life, and as such, it also impacts heavily on the way we work. And we definitely see the different areas of financial reporting making use of different technologies. So, for example, we see technology used within everyday company business, with more and more use of data dashboards and business analysis dashboards to allow companies to keep track of how business is going on a daily basis. We also see companies making use of financial reporting systems and through systems that allow them to take information from the general ledger and all their databases and compile it straight into that business analysis and forward into their financial reports and financial statements. We hear a lot about the use of technology in audit, with things like automated audit, and various people starting to talk about concepts such as real-time audit, allowing technology to make things more available on a more timely basis. We also hear quite a bit about technology used by investors, regulators, and other users of the end financial statement. Now, that's an area that the council has indicated to us it's particularly interested in. As well as the discussion today and the presentation today, we're also hoping at a future stage to get you a speaker to come and talk to you from the perspective of an investor user of financial statement data and data in general. And they'll come and talk to you more about some of the topics you'll hear today, particularly around data analysis. Today, we're focusing on that topic of data analysis. We see it as one of the main areas of technological change that we think has an impact on a number of areas of the financial reporting chain, both in the provision of information for companies and their financial statements in the first place, within audit, and within investment use and regulator use as they analyze those financial statements. So Karen Gillen's here from the ICAEW. They've been doing quite a bit of work in their IT faculty to look at technology and its impact on the accounting profession. And as part of that, they've done research and published a number of papers on that overall impact, but also on various different areas of technology, including on big data and data analysis. So I will pass you over to Kirsten.
Thank you very much, Andy, and thank you very much for inviting us to come here this afternoon and to share some of our thinking and our work on the impact of technology on business and on the accountancy profession more broadly. said, Richard and I both work in the IT faculty in ICAW, and we're one of seven specialist faculties, and we have a dual role, partly to help our members understand technology trends, to try and demystify some of the hype and what some of the technology means, but also to look in terms of the public interest and to think about how technology is impacting on business, how it's changing things and what that means for the profession. So today I'm going to focus specifically on big data and analytics and talk about some of the work we've done in terms of understanding what that really means and what's new, and also how that's being applied in a variety of contexts, in audit, in finance functions, in business more broadly. And just by way of introduction of myself, I've been at ICAW now for about 10 years, but my background is very much technology and advisory work. I'm not from an accountancy background, so I always get that up front. But I spend a lot of time looking at how businesses make use and how our members make use of technology and the opportunities and the challenges they face in that. So as Andy says, we've published a variety of works on technology at a high level and how it impacts the profession. And we see broadly three strands of technology, just by way of context. A lot of that's around data, data analytics, big data, data standards, cybersecurity, all these kinds of things around data. Obviously, data is at the heart of what accountants do, and so new capabilities in data can have a potentially quite profound effect on what accountants do. But also a lot of trends in what we call interaction, how we work, mobile, cloud computing, social media, the shift online, having a tremendous impact on what accountants do. And then finally, financial technologies. That's certainly the hot topic at the moment. Fintech, looking at blockchain and distributed ledger technology and all kinds of ways in which financial resources are being transferred, managed and understood, which may potentially have an impact on the profession. So there's lots of technology trends. Of course, the profession covers many different activities. And again, we talk about this idea of digital disruption. And we do talk about that in many contexts. We've done a lot of work on audit and how audit is changing due to new capabilities in data and analytics. We've talked a lot about small accountancy practices and the pressures they're under from cloud computing models, from online services, from digital tax, from reduction in compliance work, and from, of course, automation and artificial intelligence and the growth of those kinds of technologies. We've done a lot of work with finance functions, looking at how some of their activities are changing. And, of course, financial reporting. I think the majority of work we've done in this space has been on XBRL, and we're looking very much to kind of expand our thinking now into broader areas such as big data and analytics. So the presentation I'm going to give is very broad. I'm suspecting everyone in the room, there's a very wide range of knowledge and experience of technology, so it's pitched at a fairly broad and high level. But obviously in the discussion we can take a variety of questions. So I'm going to start just by talking about what we're talking about. What on earth is big data? It's a bit of a marketing term, it's a bit of a buzzword, it's a bit of hype. So what is really new when we talk about big data, and what are some of the capabilities? And big data, there's no single definition, but we usually refer to these three V's, and the three features of big data are around these V's. So firstly, it's around volume, it's about big. There's an awful lot of data in the world, and I'm not going to blind you with zettabytes and how many trillions of bytes there are being created every day. There is a lot of data, and at the heart of improvements in this space is the growth of computing power, the exponential growth of computing power over many years, which is just seeing enormous growth in processing power every year and every few years. And that really is just enabling people to handle vast amounts of data that they simply weren't able to do in the past. But volume, I mean, the only companies that genuinely have really big data are, you know, the Googles of the world, the Facebook, they're in a different magnitude in terms of big data. But the volume question does have an impact on everyone, because what it really means is that organizations can look at all of their data. They can look at all of their data sets, all of their transactions, instead of focusing on samples and subsets and aggregated totals. They really have the ability to process and look at vast amounts of data. So they can look at all their data. So the volume part is very important for all organizations. But it's not just about volume. The second V is about variety. And that is the ability to process and analyze enormous new data sources and all kinds of ways in which we are all, as consumers, and, as customers, as citizens, as businesses, generating information and data, digital data that can be used within businesses. And whether that's pictures or social media stream or location data from our mobile phones, or all of these kinds of new sources of data can be used by businesses increasingly in their analysis and put into their models. And then finally, the third V is around velocity. And, you know, one of the features of computing power, yes, is it enables you to do volume, but it also enables you to process at speed. So it enables us to realize far more in practice ideas of real-time analysis and real-time reporting, if you like. And the culture around big data and the emphasis when we talk about big data is very much on real-time. It's about actionable insight. It's about doing something with the data now. It's not historical. It's very much focused on the present and on the future, because the other big part of big data is that it feeds into predictive models. So it's very much forward-looking, and those trends all work together. So when we talk about big data, we think very much about those three Vs. And of course, underlying all of that is a massive drop in cost. So it's enabling people to actually make use of it. This is not just something for the big guys. It's with the drop in cost, we're all able to make much greater use of these kinds of capabilities. So that's data, but of course you need to do something with it, so there's also linked to that is analytics. And I think it's helpful just to bear in mind when we talk about big data, that just the spectrum of different things we're talking about, because there's lots of different activities that get bundled together under this idea of analytics. And at one end of the spectrum, really what you're talking about is simply looking at data, looking at the whole of a data set, looking at all the transactions you've done through usually, you know, very good visualization tools, and being able to see trends, see patterns, see outliers, see exceptions, see things that look a bit odd, and being able to go from aggregate data, drilling into very granular data. And you're not doing anything that's statistically particularly complicated. All you're really doing is looking at a lot of data with very powerful tools. And in many senses, when businesses are talking about this, a lot of the time that's really all they're doing. The next level is really linking data together and bringing new data sources into analysis to provide new kinds of insights. And this is, again, stuff that's always been possible, but was just not done very much because there was a lot of manual work required, it was very expensive, it was very inconvenient. But with the new tools and the new ways that data can link together, it becomes a lot easier. So, for example, we were at an internal audit function of a bank, and they talked about a very easy way of linking the data from the holiday systems of traders to the actual system, the trading system, so they could link together when traders were on holiday and then look at also when they were accessing the system, so they could very easily and very quickly see if traders were accessing systems when they're on holiday, which is a very, very big, you know, no-no in terms of compliance and raised very big flags. And while that was always theoretically possible, you know, it was too difficult to do on a very systematic level. And then thirdly, we get to the predictive models. And this is the machine learning, the complicated algorithms. And that essentially is about learning from very large amounts of data, developing patterns which go into predictive models. And really what's new here is simply around the amount of data. When you speak to data scientists and try and find out the new algorithms, in many cases, they're doing stuff that's been around a long time. The real qualitative difference is the fact you've just got vast amounts of data. So if you look at things like language translation, that's improved substantially in recent years, not because of any great new breakthroughs in language translation, but it's to do with the fact that Google can access every single language translation on the internet and use billions of data points to feed into their predictive models. So it just makes them that much more accurate and that much more usable and that much more reliable in a business context. So those, you know, are some of the concepts and the boundaries of what we're talking about. How does that translate into business practice? I'm just going to mention audit here because that is an area we've looked at quite a lot. And there's lots of new capabilities that we've put on the screen, computing power, visualization, using new sources of data, using predictive models, the move into real-time audit, which always gets lots of discussion going. But the thing we've talked about most in practice really has been this shift to 100% analysis and the move from sampling to looking at all the transactions within an organization. And what that really means. Because there's a lot of discussion, a lot of debate around whether testing and looking at all the transactions in the context of an audit, what does that do? Is that providing substantive audit evidence? Is it testing? Is it risk assessment? Is it is it simply a more sophisticated way of sampling? And there's a lot of discussion going on with the firms, with the regulators, to kind of understand how this is changing. But in the paper that we've written about this, we think that this does present an opportunity to kind of reimagine audit based in a world of new data and big data and analytics. Because if you go back to the origins of audit, audit, when it started, used all the data. It looked at every single transaction. And audit, as we know it today, has been shaped by the fact that as businesses grew, we couldn't look at all the data. Our assumptions and our approach to audit is based on limits in data. So sampling, materiality, risk, all these kinds of concepts in audit that are at the heart of the standards are fundamentally based on the fact auditors can't look at all the data. They've got to just look at small samples and decide what to look at. And if we were reinventing audit in a world today where you can look at all the data, maybe it would look very different. So we think, you know, there's an opportunity just to rethink some of these fundamental concepts as we move into a world in which we do have access to more data. And some of those limitations we've had in practice over the last 50 years are lifted. So moving on to just some new possibilities in data that may have some relevance in the world of reporting more broadly. Many new sources of information that investors use, and I'm sure if you can get some people from the investor community to share what they're doing, I would be very interested to find out more about that. I certainly, when I got asked to do this presentation, immediately went off and looked on the internet for some stories around how investors are using some of this information to supplement the analysis they're doing. And there are some really nice stories about using unstructured data really effectively to feed into their predictive models, and which, you know, provide signals and help them predict revenues before financial results are actually announced. So, for example, satellite information. There's quite a nice story about the US retailer JCPenney and the fact that hedge funds were basically taking satellite images of every car park outside a JCPenney store and feeding all that data into their predictive models and coming up with a significant rise in revenue, which was well beyond market expectations. And then when the financial results were announced, it was shown that actually their predictive models were absolutely bang on. And so they were using satellite data to supplement and to feed in and provide signals around what revenue might be. Or there was an example a few weeks ago of social media data, what's often called location intelligence, taking data from mobile phones and check-in applications and all this kind of stuff to look at where people are and what they're doing. And the chief executive of Foursquare, which is quite a big social media location-based application, printed a blog around the results of a Mexican restaurant, Chipotle, I think that's pronounced as, predicting 30% drop in revenues based on the location intelligence they had. And that was, again, far beyond what the markets were broadly expecting. And again, 2 weeks later, the results were published, and they were absolutely bang on in their predictions. And essentially what they're doing is just footfall. There's nothing conceptually new. They're doing footfall, but you couldn't realistically have someone in every car park or someone in every mall across America gathering this kind of data. These new data sources provide a systematic way and a cost-effective and a viable way of gathering all that kind of information and inputting it into predictive models. Another source of data is text, and actually ICAW has been funding a research project in the last few years at Manchester University, where they've been trying to get text from annual reports and get that and get some sense and meaning out of that so it can be used in analysis. So instead of just looking at the numbers, you're actually feeding in the text that's being used. And again, that can possibly be indications of fraud. Maybe the text and the language that's used can be used to indicate when a company's in trouble before that shows up in the numbers. There's a lot of academic research that's hypothesizing about all these kinds of things, and it's trying to make some of that analysis more real. So lots of ways in which investors are using some of these new sources of data to supplement analysis and really make their predictive models much more accurate. And of course, you know, businesses themselves are making tremendous use of this. I've just got a very generic slide on data because obviously businesses are using enormous amounts of data, and we can see it's enabling businesses to kind of shine a light on their operations in a way they've never been able to do before, and to have really granular understanding of what's going on in many parts of their operations and understanding customer interactions. And when we go back to that point around audit, again, a lot of our thinking around accounting, around reporting, around all these things is based on limited information and the fact that businesses don't necessarily have a very granular understanding of what's going on. So again, if businesses do have very clear understanding of exactly what's going on, then maybe it challenges some of the underlying assumptions around accounting, reporting, business planning, business decision making. And to provide again some specific examples, we're writing a report at the moment on data analytics and how that's being used in businesses and how that's changing thinking about internal controls because of the granularity of data that's available to businesses. And there's examples around debtors and the level of understanding businesses can now have around their debtors. They can link demographic information so they can see very clearly which debtors fall into demographic groups that they're never going to collect from and which debtors fall into demographic groups which actually perfectly capable of paying, they've probably just forgotten. So it's shaping their response, and it's also shaping how they provision for bad debt, because they really have an understanding of at a very granular level of what's going on in the organization. And of course, in areas like marketing, that our thinking in that area has been very much informed by the fact that the old adage, we know 50% of marketing spend is wasted, we just don't know which 50%. Well, I'm sure an internet company, they come at that from a completely different angle. They wouldn't do anything unless they have data and understanding. Everything they have in terms of their marketing, their product development is based on data. It's based on understanding who's clicking on what, what's selling, their advertising, how long people are spending. They've got masses of data that's informing their testing, their piloting. They're always gathering data. So they've got a very clear understanding of what they're spending their money on and what kind of value they're getting from it and what's wasted and what isn't. And they're piloting and they're stopping things. They're not spending huge amounts of money on things they know are not going to work. So again, maybe just it challenges some of our traditional ways of thinking about some of these areas. And we talk about this a lot in the context of Google and internet businesses, but I just wanted to flag as well, if we're looking more futuristically, something like the Internet of Things, because while we've talked about that for a long time, I think we're of the view that that is starting to come into its time. And, we often think about the Internet of Things as about talking fridges and all this kind of stuff, and that's not really what the Internet of Things is about. It's about the industrial internet. It's about putting chips and data sensors into all kinds of physical products and therefore enabling all kinds of businesses to get new insights about products, about assets, where they are, what state they're in, who's using them, what their products, how their products are being used, what their customers are doing. And you might think Nike is a manufacturer of shoes and a manufacturer of sports equipment, and they are. But they're also at their heart a digital business. When they put chips in their shoes, when they set up apps for their customers, what they're doing is gathering enormous insight that informs their marketing, it informs their product development, it informs everything they do. So yes, they do have physical goods, but they're gathering data from all of that. And as we see more and more sensors embedded into more and more of what we do, smart meters, it's all about helping energy companies understand how their customers use energy. So the more we see of this, the more data all organizations are going to have that will inform decisions and thinking around planning, around decisions, and maybe that will have some longer term impact in terms of accounting and reporting. But of course, that is a bit of speculation. I'm not going to pretend that that's what all organizations are doing today. There are very many practical challenges of implementing data and analytics, and just to, there are a few of them on the slide there. At the heart of it is data, poor quality data. Many organizations have poor quality data, and in most projects on data and analytics, the vast majority of time and resource will be spent cleaning data, sorting data, making it into a format in which it can be used. So data is a big practical challenge. Data standards, is the plumbing and underpins all of this. If you want the Internet of Things to work, it's reliant on a huge effort to bring together standards. Cybersecurity, privacy, those kinds of things underpin. The modeling side, the interpreting results, making sure that you do understand the technicalities of it. And of course, the organizational challenges, the skills within organization, the mix of statistical, technology, and business skills, those are hard to come by. And just changing the organization to make use of this data, to rely on data, to think of decisions as being based on data, and having the processes to respond. We talk a lot about real-time control and real-time response? Well, you need organizational structures that enable that. And a lot of organizations have the capabilities, but they don't use it because they don't have the people, they don't have the processes in place really to enable them to make use of those kinds of capabilities. So there's an awful lot of organizational change that's also needed in order to make use of these capabilities. So as I said, there, you know, when this is not all the real world at the moment, there's a lot of practical challenge, but there's certainly a lot of capabilities out there. So just in closing, before we go to the, you know, obviously questions and discussion, we have a variety of resources that are freely available to everyone as part of our thought leadership process. We have a paper called Big Data and Analytics, What's New, which is a short paper just highlighting some of the stuff I've talked about today in terms of new capabilities and what is different and what are some of the opportunities. We have a specific paper on audit, which I know has been discussed by the IASB. We had cooperation with the FRC. I was in Asia in April, and this was a topic that came up repeatedly in all the presentations I did all around the Asian countries. There's a lot of interest in this area, and we produced a paper that brings together all the firms, the FRC, a number of different stakeholders, just to explain what is actually changing and what's going on and what are some of the challenges to standards and existing thinking that some of this creates. And we are producing a new paper on data analytics in business and how that's affecting thinking about controls and some of the ways that organizations are changing controls and governance because of that really granular level of detail and sort of light they have over their organizations. And then finally, we have an overarching paper, Providing Leadership in a Digital World, that talks about all of these trends, big data, fintech, cloud, all of this stuff, and some of the opportunities and the threats for the profession, because we take a very positive view. We think the profession should be embracing technology and making the most of it. But we absolutely recognize artificial intelligence, blockchain, these are all things that potentially take over an awful lot of tasks accountants have particularly done. So we see there are opportunities and there are some real challenges, and we need to address those and really be proactive about thinking about that. So we have a paper that looks, said very broadly, and thinks about our role as ICAW. We are keen to help our members, but we're also keen to partner. We think collaboration and sharing of knowledge is, you know, tremendously important to help the profession as a whole engage and prepare and be proactive in this space. So we're delighted to be here today and to share our knowledge and to learn the kinds of things you're thinking about in the foundation, and we're keen to, you know, to collaborate and to help in any way in the future and to input the kind of experience and knowledge we're gaining as we speak to businesses and firms and around the world, what is going on in practice and the opportunities and the challenges. And I think with that, I will close the formal part of my presentation. I'm very happy to hand back now to myself and Richard. And we also have our head of financial reporting here, Nigel Slade-Johnson, and we're all happy to take any questions or listen to any comments and discussion.
Okay, thank you very much, Kerstin. I think that it is a very good summary of high levels. It is very good high-level summary of the disruptive technology we are seeing. Is there any questions to Kerstin before we break up? We have some 13 minutes before we go break session. Okay, Surya.
For sharing. I just wanted to touch upon one of your comments. You said it's getting very cheap, but I can tell you as somebody who invests in technology,
That's
anything fair but point. The case. Maybe cheap for the individual consumer, but yeah. I'm not sure in the corporate world it's getting cheap.
That's a fair point. Cheaper. And I think cloud, I think, is an important part of this as well, because I think the cloud model actually is an important part of enabling people to access that kind of capabilities in the services. But no, you're right. I'm probably exaggerating slightly. I think, you know, costs have gone down, so people do have more access. But yeah, you're right. And large-scale data capabilities are still expensive. And when we talk about the firms, they are investing a lot of money in this. They are spending a lot of money. So, you know, that's a fair point.
And I think just touching upon that, it's true that the unit costs may have come down, but as you say, with so much data being available, even a simple concept like moving away from sampling, say, 25 transactions now to trawling 25,000 transactions, in a way, increases your costs. So we have to be mindful of that transition and to understand what extra value we get for that.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good question. I know when we often have people coming to us saying, I have all of this data, what do I do with it? And I think that's the insight. You've got to know what you're doing with it. And that's the difficult bit, because everyone increasingly is drowning in data. And I think the value of the profession is helping people to understand and asking those kinds of questions to really get insight from the data, because otherwise we do just drown in vast amounts of data. And I think understanding what you want to know and how you're going to use it is really where the value comes. I think that absolutely, and there's an enormous amount of effort that has to go into that. I absolutely agree.
Thank you.
Richard.
Vanya?
Thank you for the presentation, Christine, but I think that as well the cost, the safety of the data in the cloud is also would also be a source of challenging for those who want to implement a technology as a base to control their business.
Absolutely. So absolutely. The more data you have, the more you have to think about security. And you're right, in terms of another cost, that's a massive cost in terms of thinking about securing all that data, especially if you're gathering more and more consumer data. And you also, it's not just security, privacy as well. What are you going to do with that data? So I think absolutely that is another part to it. And a lot of the work in the faculty we also do as well is in cybersecurity. And again, helping organizations, or sort of encouraging organizations to think about what data is, what's useful and what's valuable and what do you need to go. You can't just gather everything and keep everything forever. It's trying to understand what's useful and really protecting that. And that's a whole different mindset, I think. And absolutely in terms of transition and some of the practical challenges, you're absolutely right. Security is a very important one as in a profession. It's one we should absolutely be emphasizing as well.
Yes, I mean, you were talking a lot about big data being used in analytics and improving the possibilities of doing analysis, which obviously is true for analysts and investors as well. But that really refers to non-gap data, let's put it this way. I didn't see so much how standard setting or gap-defined financial reporting data is really so much affected by the availability of other data or the possibility of better, of big data management tools or whatever. That's something where I'm still puzzled a bit.
Yeah, I think that's maybe a point to discuss in terms of the impact. I think, yeah, absolutely, we were talking it very much as a complement and as a supplement to the kind of the corporate reporting and the financially reported data. I don't have that much insight. Do you have any other comments around that?
No, thanks. I think it's an interesting point when you're bringing in non-financial data. Mixing it with financial data, you can get tremendous insight. But where is the regulation? Where are the standards within that? It will be interesting to discuss that maybe in the next session.
Yes, one question. Any other question? May I ask one question? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Unity. Today, your summary is very high level, and I'm quite curious that the what would be a time frame for this kind of disruptive technology to which we can employ? For example, let's say that the automatic auditing, et cetera. How long do you envisage that how long it will take for us to have that kind of disruptive technology to auditing community?
It's a very difficult question to answer. As you said, I think the nature of technology and the lessons we've learned from technology is capabilities is very different from what we can do in practice, because as we see, it's one thing having the capability, but there's a huge amount of organizational requirements as well. So I think the technology capabilities are improving very quickly. We've seen exponential growth, and we talk about the chessboard story, if you know the chessboard story, around the fact that we're halfway through the idea of the chessboard. And do you know the chessboard story?
It's the rice one.
The rice story, yeah.
Yeah.
So for those who don't know about the chessboard story, the idea is that exponential growth can be represented by a chessboard and one grain of rice or the first chess square, and then you double it, so there's two and there's four and there's eight. And by the end of the chessboard, there's some astronomical number that I don't know. Because we've had exponential growth, and the nature of that is it, you get small growth very, you know, sort of trundles along and not very much happens for quite a long time, and then suddenly you get this huge growth, this hockey stick type growth, and the argument goes with technology, we're seeing that. So the capabilities are growing in terms of technology very quickly. I think the challenge is for organizations to make sense of it, and at the heart of that actually is things like quality of data, bringing data together, you know, extracting data from client systems. Those are where the issues are. So I think I'm not going to commit to a time frame at all, I'm afraid, but maybe sooner than we think, because I think the capabilities are there.
Thank you very much. Do you have any other questions? Okay.
I thought maybe I could give an auditor's viewpoint on that question. I think it's very much in development, and it'll vary hugely depending on the client. You know, we have clients where we would come and say, can we run these protocols on your systems? And they'd say, well, we already do that thing. And right through to other clients where the systems are just not capable of processes, their legacy systems, they struggle. You did raise the issue that in some cases clients are very nervous about us putting our applications into their systems. So it is a developing area. In 5-10 years, I'm sure it'll have made a huge difference to what we do. I think it's also fair to say that some of these things we've been doing for a long time, but obviously it's become a very hot topic. I mean, particularly in the UK, it's become a hot topic this year, or in the last few years, because of the level of firm of audits that are tenders that are going on at the moment. We're at the sort of early stages of the mandatory firm rotation, so we've got a very large number of tenders, and it's become one of those subjects that all the firms seek to take an advantage on. But it is a developing area, and it's not without its problems at the moment.
Okay, thank you. Okay, any other